more. It's the heart of the Osborn that we all adore. Your friendly neighborhood comic book store. Out among the stacks of new releases, browsing with your future new best friends, you're gonna find the book you love to pieces. The girl behind the counter recommends dollar books and shelves of graphic novels. Action figures, board games, toys, and models to add to your new Comic Wednesday haul. The comic book store, the comic book store, 'cause that's where the books live, but it's also much more. It's the heart of the Osborn that we all adore. Your friendly neighborhood comic book store.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Source Material Live. I'm your host, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified. Mr. Mark Radledge, and this week we are taking a look at Lucifer. First, the 2075-odd issue comic book, and then tomorrow we'll be looking at the all the seasons up to date from Fox and Netflix on TV Party. Joining me tonight, we've got a double header of my of the people that I turn to regularly for this show since I took it over from Jesse. First, he's the man around here from the Cosmic Treadmill, Mr. Chris Sheehan. How do you do, sir?
Hey, how are you? I'm very happy to be here, and it was a little bit of a wild ride to get here, as a matter of fact. When you asked me to do, when you told me you were doing this show, you're doing Lucifer, I assumed that we were talking about the more recent Sandman Universe title, Lucifer, from, I believe it was 2019 it hit. And I was like, oh yeah, I've talked about that for hours already, so that'll be no big deal. And then you told me it was this one, and I was like, oh yeah, I probably have that on my shelf. And I did not. I had the first issue, but I don't have the trade on the shelf, so we had to dig into the bowels of the internet to try to find it. And upon visiting the bowels of the internet, I was nearly molested by by pop-ups that really wanted to have some physical alone time with me. So I actually had to go looking for it, and all the comic shops around here, it's like on Mondays, all the hair salons and comic shops are closed. So had to go to the secondhand stores and the record shops and finally found it, finally read it. So we're good to go.
All right. Well, we appreciate the effort, sir.
If nothing else, that I'll give you.
Also, wanting to talk about Lucifer, both the comic and the show from Honeysuckle Rose Creations, it's Alexis Haina. How do you do, madam?
Well, now I'm scared because you're talking about another book, and I'm sitting there going, did I read the right thing? Did I get screwed up again?
Well, I initially told you Get Lucifer Book 1, and we were going to do the entire book, but that's like 13 issues, and I've learned that that's just too much for me. You know, after 6, things get unwieldy. So I was like, you know what? Let me go back. And I did some research, and I found out that the most recent trade paperbacks of Lucifer do them in about 13 issue volumes to get through the entire 70 some odd issues, but the original trade paperbacks were much more manageable. The first one, the one that we're taking half a look at, is called Devil in the Gateway, and it combines the one through three issue of the Sandman Presents Lucifer, which I guess is what got the ball rolling, and then the first four issues of the Lucifer series. So either way, if you have Lucifer Book 1 or if you have Devil in the Gateway and you read the first four issues, then you are on the right page and you are ready to go. Are you ready to go, madam?
I sure hope so. I've got something here that says Lucifer Book 1. It's got a picture of a blonde Lucifer doing the bird thing with his fingers, and you can see it makes it look like he's got a shadow of wings on the wall. Sure, still hoping that's the right book.
And you read the first four issues?
Was it about six cards, or the sixth? What was it? The dealing out six cards? Was that the... I was hoping that was the story. That is the story, right?
That is the story I read.
Okay.
Okay, crud. I've been reading the Morningstar option, not a six-card spread. The Morning Card option is the Sandman Presents Lucifer 1 through 3.
That's six the first half, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I read.
Okay. Well, then let's start there. because since you read it, and I want you to have something to talk about, you can at least kind of sum that up for us and tell us what you thought of Sandman Presents Lucifer 1 through 3, and then we'll shift over into Lucifer 1 through 4.
All right, that works. I apologize for the confusion. I feel like such an idiot.
That's all right. So I have here a summary here, and I'm just going to read the summary straight through that incorporates the entire... it talks a little bit of what goes on in The Sandman Presents Lucifer, and then it gets into issue number one here. So I'll read part of this. Heaven can wait, hell can't. From the pages of The Sandman comes Lucifer, a new ongoing Vertigo series starring the Ultimate Rebel. When fallen angel Lucifer Morningstar asked Dream of the Endless to sever his wings so he could walk among mortals, the former Lord of Hell thought he was making the right decision. But managing a piano bar in L.A. has lost its charm, and now the darkest star in the City of Angels is ready to get back in the game. Only this time he'd rather play God. Written by Mike Carey, with art on the first three-issue story arc by Chris Weston and James Hodgkins, and the stunning cover art by Duncan Fagretto, Lucifer finds the title character facing a dilemma. At the end of the Sandman Presents Lucifer miniseries, Lucifer was left in possession of a letter of passage from God himself, a passport to any realm the bearer desires. Is the letter what it seems, a one-way ticket that could restore Lucifer to either heaven or hell, or just the latest move in a subtle game designed to remove him from the face of creation? A saga of biblical proportions begins... Okay, well, let me stop there. All right, Alexis, so you read The Sandman Presents Lucifer 1 through 3. Tell me about it, and what'd you think?
One thing that I really found interesting, and it's going to sound weird, but it's the different use of fonts and styles amongst the different characters. A lot of times in comics, they either use Comic Sans entirely, sans, not sand, that makes me sound like I don't know what I'm talking about, for all of the dialogue. This book, they decide to have a little fun with it, and various different characters get, well, they get different fonts. Now, I'm not going to pretend to be totally scholarly here and be able to know which font is which or be able to identify them, but I kind of like this idea that as the different characters are talking, you see different style fonts, and you get, I think it paints a better portrait of how they're speaking. You actually get to see more from this than you would if they were just, for lack of better terms, talking normally. I think it actually gives a better idea of what their voice might sound like and just how important it is. If nothing else, also gives a better idea when you have multiple characters talking. Clearly, some of them are not of our world, and sometimes it can be actually hard to tell. It's like, wait, which one's saying what? But so now you can actually go, oh, okay, they've got the font with the T that looks like it's a ruin. That's obviously the monster. And then they got the really fancy one. That's obviously Lucifer. And then that one's Comic Sans. That's obviously Rachel. So it was kind of interesting to look at it like that. It did take a while to get used to reading that kind of stuff. I'm not going to lie. Lucifer, the font they chose for Lucifer's dialogue, it's a beautiful font, but it's one of those not very loopy style of writing, but a lot of the bulk of the letters look very similar. And it actually, it can get a little hard to read sometimes, that, especially after reading Comic Sans. You kind of have to, you know, snap your brain back and go, okay, you're reading this in a different way. Get used to it.
Yeah, they do that sometimes with Thor, and it never fails to, like, trip me up every time it's, because he has that very Shakespearean tone to him, so they give him a pseudo-Shakespearean font, so it's, it always kind of gets under my skin when I'm trying to read it. And you go from, you know, Captain America and Iron Man talking to then Thor with this flowery, florid sort of a angled font. It's very strange. I could definitely see there being a challenge.
It kind of snaps you out of reading it, doesn't it?
Because it does.
Your brain gets so used to reading a certain style, then to see a different font, it pulls you out of the book for a minute. And I don't know, honestly, if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's a stylistic choice, and I appreciate it. But at the same time, I'm sitting there going, you know, the more you read comics, the more you actually really want to get pulled into the story. Mm-hmm. So I guess it depends on how you really approach it, if you like that snapback or not.
Because I'll start, like, actually reading it in my head very, very dramatically when I see that kind of thing. So it's like... Like, Thor might as well be, like, singing show tunes at some points, because it's just so... the way it's like, thine, thee, thine. It's like, oh, boy, you know. So it probably does the wrong thing with me, or I do the wrong thing with it, I guess.
I'm not going to lie. Something about the font and the design of Lucifer in this, I hear his voice as Pierce Brosnan. I am seriously getting like a very cool 007 voice. Not Tom Ellis, who I have been, obviously we're going to talk about the show, and it's, but the more I read, it's like, this is not the Lucifer I've been seeing on the screen. And I think when we talk tomorrow, we're going to get into what I'm affectionately calling the foxification of this series.
Yeah, he has more menace in the issues that I read than he mm-hmm. has at all in the show. Detective! Detective! Ugh.
I mean, I can't make fun of him too much because, sweet Jesus, he is gorgeous. But
somebody was telling me that, like, when that they went out of their way to make this iteration of Lucifer look like David Bowie.
I don't see it.
I don't either. Yeah, I think when I look at him, I feel like they because like when they made John Constantine, he was supposed to look like Sting, you know, the singer. Exactly. And it's like, I feel like they moved Constantine into like a more unique look, and then they slid Lucifer in with like kind of a Stingish look. I but then again, I usually conflate the two anyway.
That actually confused me when I got the book, because I didn't realize they had changed the design so much. I've been watching the series now for a while. I've got 4 more episodes that I'm going to binge tonight. I had to take a break so I could watch Haunting of Bly House. I have my priorities. And when I first got the book, I thought it was Constantine on the cover. Yeah. I did not know that Lucifer in the book was a blonde.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they act semi-similarly, so it's like, it's almost like we have two of the same character, just through like different prisms or something.
Yeah, Lucifer is Constantine if he's not drunk.
Yeah. Yeah, they're both tricksters. They're both out for their own well-being. They're very similar characters. It's almost surprising that they're both in the same universe.
Yeah, like I said, it's just he doesn't slur his words as much as Constantine does.
So what happens in these first 3 issues?
We have a girl here named Rachel. She lives with her dad and her brother. Brother has, what is it called? Rett syndrome? I think is what they call it. It seems to be just he's mentally retarded. He can't really speak. He can't really function. You get the sense that Rachel, she helps take care of him, and she's trying to be a good daughter, but you really do also get the sense that she's not where she wants to be. This isn't what she wants to do. We also cut back to Lucifer, who is talking with Amenadiel, again thrown for a loop. Amenadiel on the series is D.B. Woodside. Amenadiel here looks like Terry Gilliam when he wanted them to guess the 3 riddles to cross the Bridge of Death and Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And I actually have had to reread the dialogue between Lucifer and Amenadiel a couple of times. Because, again, we were talking about how the whole dialogue with Thor, it's very similar here. The dialogue is written, oh god, I'm just going to say it, it's pretentious. It is very pretentious dialogue. I adore Neil Gaiman and what he has given us, but this dialogue, I read it going, can you please just speak English? My God, get to the point. So he talks with him, and we go back to Rachel, her dad, who we find out later is pure Navajo, born on the reservation. She's half Navajo. He goes out for a bit. He leaves Rachel in charge. She decides she's going to throw a small party against her dad's wishes, kind of tucks her brother into bed, and she's like, okay, here's your stuffed animals. Don't make a mess. Bye! And unfortunately, in the middle of the party, the brother throws up, knocks over a lamp. She goes to check on him, and she's so furious, she goes, you know, you dirty little bastard, why don't you just choke? And the brother chokes. And as Rachel is freaking out, just, you know, like, oh my god, what has happened, Lucifer appears in her bedroom. He asks a couple of questions. He asks, like, you know, could your brother talk? It's very unknown, very mysterious, again, a little pretentious. He disappears. Rachel really doesn't know what's going on. You get a great scene with Lucifer going down to hell, and I absolutely love this bit where you have two demons torturing a soul. I'm guessing they're just eviscerating him from the picture. And they can't believe it's Lucifer, because at this point he has fled hell. And they look up, and they leave this soul on the ground. They go, just hold yourself there for a minute or two. Would you? Normal service will be resumed shortly. And they just walk off, leaving this dude with his guts hanging out on the ground. Cut back to Rachel. She's panicking. They haven't even called the cops yet. She doesn't know what she's going to do. She's held a party against her dad's wishes. She knows she's going to be in trouble. This poor girl is clearly over her head. And at that moment, I guess it's a demon. They never really make clear if these are demons or just random spirits or what they are. And it's a little different from the series, which I've gotten used to, because the demons in this book are drawn like demons. They've got bizarre features and everything. The Foxification, you got a little used to them, quote unquote, possessing humans. So you get a little more used to it. It's like, oh, now we actually have funky, weird little people running around. Anyways, he bursts in. He kidnaps Rachel. Lucifer comes to deal with him. The demon whose name, Mahu, that was the demon's name, essentially says Lucifer, tells Lucifer to go to hell, pretty much. And you get this awesome moment of Lucifer sprouting his wings, grabbing Mahu, gripping him up, and Mahu's like, you know, a drop's not going to kill me. And Lucifer goes, oh, no, I'm not going to drop you. We're going to go up a little higher. I'm going to kick you into orbit. You're going to freeze. You're going to rotate around the planet for a bit. And then eventually you will re-enter, and then you will die. And that's clearly enough to get Mahu to say, the kid's in the trunk of the car behind there. Just, you know, whatever. So Lucifer gets her, takes her back to Lux. I gave up trying to understand what the hell was going on with Mazik. In the later issues, does she learn to actually speak?
Or no.
Yeah.
And even in the newest Lucifer series from that might still be going on now, for all I know. Oh, God, it's unbearable. It is so bad. It's so hard to follow. The thing is, you know, she can't speak, and they give her just so much damn dialogue. It's brutal.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. For a bit, I think it took like 10 minutes of just trying to dissect her dialogue.
Yeah,
I was just like, okay, is this like with Zatanna where I have to start reading everything backwards again?
Inside out.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, what is the code here? I have yet to figure it out. So Lucifer says that he's going to help Rachel get her brother back, but it's very mysterious. They go to see, what is his name? Faramond, which he insists being called Pharrell, and he directs them to go to Albuquerque. He pays them. All the flights are taken out, so they ended up taking a drive with one of Pharrell's servants, I guess. And we get a bit of interesting dialogue from Lucifer talking about the Navajo beliefs of the origin of the world. And I'm not going to lie, and I feel horrible for saying this, especially on Indigenous Peoples Day, I have no knowledge of the Navajo tribes. I have no knowledge of their beliefs. So if any of this is true, I don't know. But if it's not true, I apologize. We are just reading what's in the book. Do either of you have any backstory on this, on the Navajo belief, if any of this is, you know, what they actually believe or not?
I couldn't tell you.
Mm-mm.
Okay, well, Lucifer gets into this great thing about how all the races of man tell the story of their origins, but they all disagree on the details. And I have crap in my throat, sorry. But he talks about how the Navajo, you know, in the Bible we always talk about there was darkness, and then the Lord said there be light. But according to Lucifer, to the Navajo, the darkness did not just change into light. The darkness was a tunnel the earliest people had to climb out of. It was a vertical tunnel that they climbed out of. And as they got to the top, they reached the light. But the tunnel to the darkness is still there. And I think this kind of reminds me of some stories I've heard about purgatory, the idea that the darkness and all that was in the darkness did not just disappear. It had to go somewhere. So there are some ideas that there is another world, the dark world. It's not heaven, it's not hell, it's not earth, but that is where the darkness went to. And that is what Lucifer describes as first world. The forest of the black oaks, 100 feet tall, standing invisible in the dark, the creatures, predators that have not eaten in geological ages. You have forgotten the voices, but they have not forgotten you. They want you to come home with the feel of your fear and your worship. But while the darkness is a home for them, for you, it was only a womb. I just really found that interesting. I love hearing about different ideas of how the world was created according to different religions, and that's a very interesting take on the let there be light concept and where the darkness went. Sorry. I apologize for the coughing. I don't have COVID, people. I have allergies. So they climb up a mountain, and there's a woman sitting there who is called Blue Flint Girl, who claims to be Rachel's grandmother, who feeds her corn pancakes cooked in grease, which Rachel says are the most disgusting thing she's ever eaten. But apparently the bear grease gives strength to the heart and mind. Okay.
Fair enough.
She gives them a medicine pouch, or what she calls a zhish, which will take them where they need to go and will bring them back. It contains 4 items, a white bead, a yellow seed, a blue feather, and a black stone. 1 charm for each world they'll pass through all the way down to the first. When the bag is empty, the journey is over. So they start on their way down. The first thing they come across are these giant fish skeletons. And at first I'm thinking, oh, this is, you know, we hear about all these stories of giant skeletons and fossils, and we see just how big, you know, early creatures were. And then the skeletons start insulting Rachel, and it's like it's her subconscious yelling at her, and they're not yelling at Lucifer, and yeah, at this point, guys, I'm just totally lost on what the hell is going on. I'm not gonna lie, this book was very hard to read, and I feel horrible because, again, it's Neil Gaiman, and I adore Neil Gaiman, but I did not have a clue what the hell was going on in these first few series. I'm gonna keep reading, gonna go ahead and eventually get to the part that I was supposed to read for tonight before I, you know, got totally confused on what the hell I was reading. But this first issue is very, very confusing.
Okay. What did you think of, just kind of in summary, what did you think of the 3-issue arc in total? Other than you were confused.
Confused, but intrigued. I'm probably going to have to go back and reread parts of it. Again, there's a lot of parts here where Lucifer's talking with the demons. He offers one demon healing medicine, and the demon talks about he was blinded by heaven, but I have no idea what's going on. And part of me is sitting there going, is this going to be explained later on? And I just didn't get a chance to really, you know, figure out what was happening. It's very hard to say. So I am intrigued, and I want to keep reading it. Right. And maybe part of it is also because I am enjoying the Lucifer series. I have really gotten a kick out of the first 4.5 series. Again, I'm almost done with what's been released on season 5. And I think part of it is I want to see where this goes and how it does tie to what I've been watching so far.
All right, well, that takes us to the first 4 issues here. There's actually a 3-issue story and then a kind of standalone issue in number 4. Start with issue number 1 here. A saga of biblical proportions begins in Lucifer number 1 as Morningstar travels to Germany to find the answers to his questions by consulting a living tarot deck guarded by an angel. But getting a reading from the cards is harder than Lucifer expected, as the living deck takes the opportunity to escape its angelic guard and seeks a new mortal host, warping and reshaping the lives of everyone it touches along the way. Among those the deck transforms are 3 members of Lucifer's diverse supporting cast: a lonely bookworm whose secret desire may prove his undoing, a struggling female cabaret performer offered a Faustian bargain for wealth, fame, and eternal life, and a young initiate in a neo-Nazi gang who may have gone too far in his quest for status and acceptance, whose personal journeys are a crucial part of the series. From the steamy streets of Hamburg to the exotic. All right, Chris, what did you think of issue number one here?
Issue one was a bit much. The rest of the series went a lot better than the first one. The first one felt endless, but it might have been oversized. I feel like they introduced, and maybe this is just because we didn't read the three-issue lead-up to this, but it felt like we were just being dropped in the middle of nowhere, and we were just overwhelmed with these characters that we don't know. I mean, this dude who runs the bookstore, we don't know this guy. All these invisible friends of his, we don't know them either. So it feels like we were kind of dropped in the middle of nowhere. And off the air, I talked about how this felt very much to me like a turn-of-the-century Vertigo book, because it's kind of what you'd get. And, I mean, a lot of unnecessary cursing. We saw boobs. It felt very much like a turn-of-the-century Vertigo book, in the fact that I really had trouble getting into it to start, and I related most to the non-supernatural parts of it. We had, I don't remember the young fella's name, but the kid who worked in the convenience store for his father, who had a crush on the neo-Nazi.
Something like that. JC.
Yeah, something like that. I really enjoyed his story. I enjoyed his character. But when it switched back to Lucifer and Mumbles, you know, it was just like, come on, we have to do this. And then when we'd get the dude talking to his invisible friends, it's like, can we just go back to the guys? Go back to the kids talking. It was a lot more interesting there. Once we got past this first issue, though, I feel like everything fell back into place, or started to fall into place for the first time, I suppose. But this first issue, I was questioning as I was trying to work through it. It was just like, am I going to be able to do three more issues of this? But thankfully, I didn't have to.
I'm with you. I felt like I was dropped in the middle of something. And because they're introducing all these other characters, you don't get a whole lot of Lucifer. And what Lucifer is doing in this first issue didn't make a tremendous amount of sense to me. Like, he says something about he wants the tarot card deck and he wants the six-card spread, but you don't really know why.
Very, very nebulous.
Yeah, I mean, and there's so much of a focus on all the other characters. I was like, Lucifer feels like a background character in his own book.
Totally.
Issue number two, Hell Hath No Fury Like Its Former Ruler, as Vertigo's newest ongoing series continues. In a botched effort to thwart Lucifer's plans, the fallen angel turned bookstore owner Milios has inadvertently unleashed the living tarot deck into the world. As the malevolent cards run amok, feast on the denizens of Hamburg, an extremely irritable Lucifer comes calling on Milios, and there's going to be hell to pay. The Bassanos are on the loose in the city. Lucifer makes plans to catch them so that he might bend them to his will, and Jill Presto meets a young girl named Innocence who offers her all the power in the world. Okay, is this the issue where they rape the guy with the bottle?
I think so.
Yeah, that was rough. That was the one that really stood out to me in this issue, was like, you know, you have the neo-Nazi who's kind of struggling with his own identity. Like, he wants to be part of the gang, but, you know, he also likes Jaishi, and, you know, he has to do something to get himself initiated into this group. So he leads Jaishi into an alley beating, and then they'll, like, shove this bottle up his ass. And he does.
They break the bottle, and, yeah.
Yeah,
and then he feels so bad about it, he sneaks out of the cabaret to... I think this is the same issue, yeah, where he sneaks out of the cabaret to call the police and kind of gets stuck.
Yeah, it's I thought that was all a bit rough. Like, I get, you know, these Vertigo comics are made for an adult audience, but it just seems like that's over the top, in my opinion.
I think they're more written for high school sophomores who wear black. I think that's those are the people who used to make fun of me for reading X-Men comics, so I'm assuming those are who they are.
You also get a lot of Jill Presto in this issue.
Which was fine.
Yeah, and I believe this is where she runs into Innocence in the bathroom, and she's like, what are you doing here?
you're
a little young for this place.
You know, it's interesting just looking at the book and all the issues. It feels like... Am I the only one that kind of feels like this series sort of expects you to know what the deal is with Lucifer? I feel like we're not getting a lot of backstory. And even the prequel, the first issues that I read, they really didn't go into what Lucifer is doing or what his plan is. Maybe they expect you to have read more of The Sandman and understand more of what's about to happen. But I feel like this... I feel like this has just dropped us in like a freaking DC film, saying, "Okay, here's what's going on. If you've read the books, you'll know what's happening. Now move it."
Yeah, that's
because he'd been around for over a decade at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing. Like, and when it's I decided
like the very
we
early
were going to
the Sandman book, which
when I decided we were going to cover the beginning of Lucifer series, I was thinking, okay, well that should be a good place to start. We should get, you know, an idea of why Lucifer left hell, what he's doing on Earth, what the mission statement is. You know, like the series, he's been on Earth for 5 years, and it's established right at the beginning he left hell because he got bored running the place, and he came to Los Angeles for a vacation, and he ended up staying, and then he got involved with the detective, and that kind of gave his life a bit of meaning. He also became rather attached to the detective. So that all got set up in the show. There's nothing like that here in the book. I have no idea why Lucifer is in Los Angeles, or Germany for that matter, other than what the summaries are telling me.
Yeah, I haven't read Sandman in, oh my god, years. I've got a handful of the first few books, but it's one of those, well, I skimmed through them a while ago. I really need to sit down and reread them. And flipping through the, you know, reading the issue that I thought we were going to discuss tonight, and flipping through the issue you guys talked about, I really get the sense of, I feel like that kid who just walked into class and realized they didn't do the prerequisite reading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of went along for the ride, and I was somewhat interested in what was going on with these other characters, but one, it's a little hard to follow, and two, like I said, Lucifer almost feels like a narrator, or, you know, like a background host to the story that involves all these other people, Jill and the Nazi and Jay Shi, you know, Milios. It feels like the book is these first three issues are more about them. Chris, any other thoughts here on issue number two?
No, because I'm, you know, the second and third issue of this arc are kind of bleeding together for me, so I'm not sure where things are.
All right, issue number three. The first story arc starring Lucifer Morningstar comes to a startling conclusion. Having absorbed the living tarot deck inside of her, like you do, wannabe magician Jill Presto has begun manifesting truly magical powers. Jill's new act has her dispensing swift and deadly vengeance on a terrified audience. Oh, yeah, I remember this.
There we go.
Lucifer finally forces the deck to give him his 6-card spread reading, and now the devil learns that sometimes too much information is a dangerous thing. With the new power she wields, Jill Presto goes on a rampage with the full powers of the Bassanos. And although she is a puppet, her powers are incredible, and she uses them to slaughter the gang that harmed her friend, Jayish. Lucifer and Mazikeen decide to interrupt the show at that point, and Lucifer takes one of the Bassanos captive, promising his return if he gets a 6-card spread. Okay, so the most memorable thing about this issue is she upstages the magician that she's working with, because now she has these magical powers, and then she realizes that there's this Nazi gang there that, you know, that beat up and raped her friend, and so she's like, she basically like tells their future, and then says, well, the future is now. So, like, one guy, she gives a stroke, and another guy, he gets injuries from a car accident, and then something else happens to another guy that ends in, like, blood.
Getting his throat cut or something, yeah.
Yeah. And that's... The neo-Nazi friend does, in fact, help Jayish get to the hospital. And she's like, he manages to escape bloody vengeance, but only for now.
For now.
Yeah, she says, like, your time is coming. She ends up keeping the powers. I don't really recall what the deal with the 6-card spread was, or how meaningful it was supposed to be to Lucifer.
Me either. Yeah.
Okay.
The thing we were building to here, it felt like we blinked and missed it. It just and like Lucifer, does he even show up in the fourth issue?
Oh well, we'll get there. Hang on. Let's focus on closing this out. But yeah, that's really it. He has this confrontation with Jill, and Jill's like, "I'm keeping the powers," and then he's like, "Okay," and then that's kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess she'll show up later in the book. She's supposed, you know, from what I'm reading here, she's one of his, one of the side characters, but
pseudo endless, yeah.
Yeah, but that's really all that happens here. Chris, your thoughts on issue number 3?
I liked Jill doing the whole, like, you're going to die from this in 30 years, but we'll just do it now. I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked her character. The little tweak with her having to decide whether or not to keep these powers, and it felt like, it's funny how we have Innocence who's like stirring the pot, you know? Mm-hmm. Like someone named Innocence is tempting her with, it's like, well, that's not good enough. Okay, how about we throw in immortality too? I forgot to tell you about that, you know? It's like, what do I have to do to get you into these powers before you leave today, you know? It was very, very salesman-y, and I liked it, especially coming from a little girl named Innocence. I thought that was pretty cool. The Constantine and Mazikeen parts, couldn't care less. Could not care less. I liked Jill visiting, what the hell was his name again?
Jash.
There he is. I liked her visiting him. I liked the fact that the neo-Nazi, what was his name, Kurt? Was it Kurt?
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked how Jayish's parents were like bowing to his feet, thanking him for calling the police because he saved their son's life, even though an issue prior he shoved a broken bottle up his ass. I mean, I like that whole sort of dichotomy there. And I have a feeling that will be either a swift and bloody death for Kurt or a redemption arc, and either way is fine by me. But more about your point of Lucifer being sort of a host or a narrator, that was part of what really kind of turned me off from the series from last year, the Sandman Universe series, because Lucifer, he's like trapped inside a skull. That's how the first arc starts. He's trapped inside a skull, and he looks like Alan Moore, so he's got a long beard, long dark beard, long dark hair, and he keeps dying. He wakes up, he like lives in a shoe, he comes outside, he dies every day. And like they'll shove him into a pail, they'll kick it down a hill, he'll die. He'll come back, he'll die again. Over and over and over again. But the other half of the story is about a mundane family, a husband and a wife who has a terminal illness, and rather than let her suffer and die, he takes her from the hospital and gets into a car accident, which puts her out of her misery. It gets into like coveny and sigily stuff after that, but it's funny actually reading this now and seeing how my thoughts about the current year series are similar to the other ones. I like the more mundane stuff. I like the characterizations with Lucifer like on the fringes. I don't know that I could do a full 22-page story of just watching Lucifer do Lucifer things. So I just thought this was kind of interesting and answered some of my questions about the current year stuff, because I wondered if this was what the legacy Lucifer was, and I guess it is for a little bit anyway.
Well, that wraps up the first 3 issues, and that's one story arc. Issue number 4, the last issue in the trade paperback, is a standalone issue. A supernatural detective thriller unfolds in a standalone issue illustrated by Dean Armstrong, the girl who would be Death, with layouts by Warren Pleece. Elaine Belloc is a typical British schoolgirl, except that she can conjure, speak to the dead, and see both the past and the future. When her best friend Mona is murdered, Elaine and Mona's ghost set out to find out why. But the killer comes hunting the hunters, and Elaine's only hope for survival is the devil himself. In this issue, we meet a young girl named... Okay. Elaine Belloc.
This was a mystery thriller? A detective thriller?
Yeah, allegedly. Although she is far from ordinary, she communicates with dead spirits of her grandmothers and can see the ghost of her murdered friend. Going on a quest to learn the identity of her friend's murderer, she finds she may have bitten off more than she can chew. But wait, someone is coming to her rescue, none other than the devil himself. Yeah, so if you like Lucifer and you want to read about Lucifer, this was not the issue for you.
Were any of the issues for us? I feel like the three of us sat down wanting to know more about the character of Lucifer, and I don't think any of this has given us any kind of in-depth look at the personality of the frickin' Lord of Darkness.
I'm really dating myself here, and I may even be misremembering, but there was an anthology, you know, like horror thriller series on HBO when I was a kid called The Hitchhiker. And, mm-hmm. yeah, okay, so Chris, you remember that, right?
Yeah, it was on HBO, and it was also on USA.
Yep. Yeah, and it was, and The Hitchhiker was always an ancillary character in the stories that involved other people.
Yep,
that's what this feels like.
It, yeah,
mm-hmm. This feels like the Hitchhiker
series. Sterling.
Yeah. So you spend 98% of this issue dealing with this girl and her talking to her ghost friend and them trying to figure out who killed her and her running afoul of this teacher and then her poisoning him with ketamine and nearly poisoning herself. And that's when Lucifer shows up and goes, Shmageggy.
Need a fix?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, really? Mark, I know you just love breaking that word out, but seriously?
Well, I don't know. Like they have a conversation, and he's like, I'm not here for you, and then it's over. Like, yeah. Did I miss something here, Chris?
If you did, I did too. This issue had like a really strong first half. I think when it hit the staples here and then all the pieces fell into place like perfectly, it really sucked me out of it. I wasn't expecting it to be such a clean closure. It's like, hey, let's go one place. Oh, that one place is where the bad guy is. Okay. It was way too convenient. And the whole story was very, very convenient, but I suppose it was when you're an ordinary girl who is very unordinary, I guess convenient things happen to you.
What did Lucifer want with her?
He just said he'll need her in the future. He said that something told him that he'll need her somewhere down the line. So maybe, like in Lucifer issue 712, it'll be, hey, you remember this girl? She's back. I don't know.
Terrific.
Isn't it?
Well, that's the end then. I don't have much else to add. Chris, any final thoughts on the four issues of the Lucifer Proper series?
Made me feel like I was a teenager again, because this is the kind of stuff I would have read when I was going into my my late teens and early 20s. This is and actually this came out when I was 19, 20 years old. So I'm surprised I didn't read this already. We're giving it a hard time, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
It's well written. It's the Hitchhiker.
Yeah, for sure. For sure it is. And I do have a fondness for Mike Carey. Mike Carey is a really good writer. He did an extended run on the X-Men in the mid-2000s that I enjoyed a whole lot. So seeing him doing something else is pretty cool. The art here was very Vertigo. Very Vertigo, not something you'd want to see on a superhero book, but passable enough for a Vertigo book. Other than that, it's so weird that like we went through an entire trade and there really isn't a whole lot to say. Other than, actually, I can't even think of another thing. There is really nothing to say.
All right, Alexis, got anything else you want to add? If not, we're going to head on out of here.
I'm going to actually have more to say tomorrow because, again, I want to talk about what I'm officially dubbing the foxification of this book, but I want to save it for tomorrow's discussion because I think we're going to have a lot more meat to talk about. Not to mention, Chris, I don't know how much you've seen of the Lucifer series.
Zero.
Chris doesn't watch television.
So I've got some thoughts, but I'm going to save them for tomorrow's show. So be sure to tune in and listen to me get off my soapbox, kids.
Yeah, we'll have myself, Alexis, David Wright, and Andrew Graham. We have 5 seasons of a show to discuss, so that's going to be a much longer show, and I'm going to need to take a lot of painkillers to get through it.
You need a lot of painkillers just to get through an average evening with us.
All right, so that's the end of our show. Hey, Chris, guess what I got in the mail today?
What was that?
I got Warrior, the Christmas special.
Ultimate Warrior, yes.
You ain't kidding Christmas when you show. Said it's a bunch of pinups. Holy
it's
cow.
It. Yeah.
Wait, is that the one with him beating the shit out of Santa and Santa's
a few times.
Yep. Oh, my.
God. Yeah, there's a lot of like raping Santa in this book. I don't know why.
I've seen the pictures on atop the fourth wall. Oh my God.
Well, that's going to be a fun episode.
Yeah, we're doing that in December. That's our Christmas special. So that's picked by Chris. All right. As we mentioned a few times now, tomorrow night we'll do Lucifer seasons 1 through 5.5. Wednesday, myself and Jesse Starcher will review Yorn, Heavy Rock Radio. And then myself and Robert Winfrey will do a TV party for The Babadook. The Babadook. So apparently that's quite the horror movie, and Robert has been insisting that I not be a weenie and watch it, so I'll give that a watch this week and we'll discuss it on Thursday. Last week, myself and Alexis Haina reviewed Wonder Woman, The True Amazon. The Podsman and I reviewed NXT TakeOver 31. And myself and Jesse reviewed Ace Frehley Origins Volume 1. So, and hey, Chris, guess what?
Huh.
I got to watch Effie's Big Gay Brunch today.
Oh, that was today?
Well, it was Saturday, while I was...
I don't even know what week we're in.
Well, I was sitting interminably in dentist office and whatnot. I got to watch Effie's Big Gay Brunch on my phone. And,
it's 2020. All the days are blurring together now, guys.
It's true.
It was I'll tell you what, the twink gauntlet was worth the price of admission. There was this one, like, Braun Strowman-looking fella. He beat up all the twinks, but then he got beat by the final twink. And then all the twinks jumped him, and he ran away.
Well, that's what you would do, right? I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah. So if you haven't had an opportunity to check out Effie's Big Gay Brunch, get on the Fight app and get yourself some Effie's Big Gay Brunch. I also watched Josh Barnett's Bloodsport, but that's not nearly as funny to say as Effie's Big Gay Brunch.
True.
All right. Speaking of funny things to say, Alexis, what do you got going on?
Hang on, I'm not quite done face palming yet. All right, Honeysuckle Rose Creations, intersection of geek and chic. We're still in the middle of uploading a bunch of new products. I got a ton of game tokens in, so I'm experimenting with some new pieces we're going to have coming up on the shop here pretty soon, both on Etsy and handmade at Amazon. Good news, we have finally gotten around to fixing up our official website translation. My husband and I actually sat down. I said, hey, do you think we could probably, put the right crap up there? That stuff says that we still had travel information for our conventions of 2019. You quickly realize with how often you rely on social media, it becomes very easy to neglect your official websites. So, hooray, we finally have the correct information on there, and the links have been updated, and now we have links on our website to our Etsy and our handmade at Amazon and our Twitter and Instagram page. Yay! That is honeysucklerosecreations.com. But of course, if you want to just cut through that, you can find us on Etsy or handmade at Amazon. And as always, keep tuned to Facebook, Instagram, and under duress, Twitter. You will see all of our updates, and hopefully when we will be back on the road, please, God, I am tired of being stuck in this house. I want to go back to traveling for Comic-Cons. Honeysuckle Rose Creations, the intersection of geek and chic.
Lay it on me, Big Daddy.
Okie dokie. You can find me at chrisisoninfiniteearth.com, and we are about to start the new, late new fall season for the Chris and Reggie channel here. Got many shows coming. Me and Chris Bailey have a trio of new shows that'll be picking up after Moratorium Mondays wraps up. Fingers crossed, God willing, next Monday that'll be over with, because this last episode has been kind of snake bit. We are living in this pandemic age here, and for like the first 6 months of it, my internet ran fine. Then the one day we're supposed to talk to a creator, my internet craps out. So we had to push it off, and then Mr. Bailey had a family issue last week, so we had to push it off again. So hopefully, the final issue of Moratorium Mondays will hit this coming Monday. From there, me and Bailey will do our ElfQuest show, our top secret new universe show. That's definitely not about the new universe, and also another show that we're tentatively calling Found Funnies, where we're going to take a look at some very, very strange and unique and very seldomly seen comics. Me and Al Sedano are doing a show that's tentatively called Learn Me the Legion, because he's going to learn me the Legion, because I haven't the foggiest idea what the Legion's all about, despite owning about 500 issues of Legion.
Talking about like the acronym Legion with Lobo and the space cops and everything?
Everything Legion. Legion of Superheroes, Legionnaires, L-E-G-I-O-N, all of it.
All you need to know about Legion is I swell up like this.
There you go. There you go. Hopefully we'll get there sometime down the line. Me and Ed Moore are doing a show that's tentatively called Maze Lighting, which is about the Maze Agency, a sort of kind of moonlighting kind of comic from the mid-80s, from Eclipse and Continuity Comics, not black and white, but an independent comics thing. On all other days, I'm doing X-Lapsed, where I'm reading current year X-Men stuff, trying to catch myself back up. Been doing it for about a month and a half, and as you're listening to this, I think episode 39 is up. So I've been doing them just about every day. Other than
you're also on, my show for at least the next 2 weeks. We got the Betty
Page.
That's true. We're going to do both years, 2019 and 2020, I think it is, or 2018, 2019, for the Betty Page Halloween specials, and then
Beautiful.
The death of Hawkman.
I'm looking forward to one of those more than the other. Yeah. But so I've got a lot of stuff with my voice on it, if anybody would care to hear that. You can find me on the Twitter machine at Ace Comics, and I did a little bit of writing at Chris's on Infinite Earths last week. Did three weird X-Men comics where we met some very strange mutants. We met Equus, the centaur mutant who only showed up once. Ice Cream Man, who could turn into ice cream. We only saw him once too. And I also did a Blockbuster Video abducted child or child exploitation comic, which featured a old sex pervert in an X-Men costume trying to pick up a kid. So there was that.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us here on Source Material Live. I want to thank Chris and Alexis for hanging out with me tonight and reading all seven issues of the trade paperback Devil in the Gateway. So tune in next week for Alexis and Chris. Be well, be safe, and behave.